I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to Minute 57 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Caprasque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Duncan Shields from Chronologically Speaking. Welcome back to the show, Duncan.
Thank you. It's good to be back here. I'm looking forward to talking about this movie again.
but that's not what you agreed when you bought your shares. So, minute 57 begins with George continuing to explain the system of the building and loan, and ends with George wanting everybody to understand who Potter really is. So, yesterday George started explaining to this crowd of people that have come to the building and loan to assumingly get their money back. That he's trying to explain to them, you know, that he doesn't have the money with him there. It's not in the safe. You know, your money is in this person's house, and that person's money is in that house, and all that stuff. And so this minute begins with George basically continuing by saying, well, you're lending them the money to build, and then they're going to pay it back to you as best as they can. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them? So my first question is, this is a very strange system. I'm not an economics person, so I don't really understand all these things that well, but I mean, okay, I want to build a house and I don't have enough money, so I'm getting a loan from the building and loan. Okay. And the building and loan uses the money from Duncan. Okay. So Duncan, your money is being held by George, and that is going to me to help build my house. But I then have to pay money back. You know, I'm paying a mortgage or whatever it is. So what is the added benefit to you? You know, Duncan must be getting, some sort of interest on it. So if that's the case, then, you know, where's this extra money coming from?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Unless it's the fact that if for every dollar that I have to pay that I get, I have to pay $1.50 back or whatever it is. And that extra money is what would go.
Yeah, I would assume there'd be some interest. I would also assume that the, you know, rising property values theoretically, you know, would help that too. Right. I'm not entirely sure how. But the other, I think that the attraction of it is that it's theoretically a lateral organization, like a community, sort of like a socialist capitalism. If that's not an oxymoron, you know, it's all local. It's definably local because it's concrete. It's houses, right? Your money is in 223 Cherry Tree Lane. It's right over there. That's right. Where it is. You know, like it's not invested in some abstract, you know, web of, you know, whatever. Like it's not something that you need a degree to understand. It's in Terry's house right over there, you know, like, and it's in my house. And that's why this speech is so powerful and so palpable is, you know, because this is like the first, I imagine these are like the first kind of financial institutions that would show up. Like you had your national banks, but then you had your local, you know, local financial institutions for local people. Like that's the heart of America. Arguably the heart of the world, you know, like you've got your group of people in your small town. And I know that like I grew up in a small town and there's no secrets in a small town. Like somebody would try to be, cheating on their wife or something like that, and everybody would know except for the wife. It's just like there's no,
That's
there's
a interesting
you
thing
can't
for you
keep
to
it a
know
secret.
when you're growing up.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's
Yeah, my upbringing wasn't super
oh,
awesome,
Jimmy's
but
father is cheating on Jimmy's mother, but as long as she doesn't find out. But good
yeah,
thing
it's
six-year-old
that.
Duncan knows this,
They're always gonna find out, but that's the thing about also like your money is in other people's houses, so you are each other's safety net, and it's like the opposite of 30 people owning 99% of the wealth on the planet, and that's what he's trying to save here because Potter doesn't care about people or quality even. I think, is it in this minute where he talks about the slum, or is that the next?
I don't know. We'll have to wait
Oh
and
yeah.
see. I don't
Yeah, okay. But this is this
Yes,
he's trying
he
to
mentioned it. I believe he does mention it.
Yeah, so like Potter only cares about profits. So if he can build a cheap, shoddy house and save some money, then he'll do that because he doesn't care about the fact that the person that lives there is going to have to live in a meager existence in this horrible, leaky place.
Right.
Like he's, in our current system of like built-in obsoleteness is kind of part of all that. Right, like rising and the rising prices that we're all experiencing with groceries and stuff, that's only possible because of these quasi-monopolies, right? Like a capitalist community only works for everyone if there's thousands of independent businesses competing and keeping each other in check, along with a thriving middle class. Like that's the America that everyone seems to have forgotten that they want. Like we're supposed to help each other, not just look out for number one.
Correct.
Like in selfishness, all is lost. Not in some spiritual hippie way, but in a demonstrably economic, real world way. And I think that's what he's trying to explain here is he's like, if you freak out and give all the power to Potter, then this town is going to become Pottersville, and he will become a king, and you will all be serfs. But you can't think about that right now because you want to protect your investment. And you're like, half of my money is better than none of my money, which is still like they must be freaking out if that's there. But I imagine it was the same with like crypto, like if you're leveraged in crypto and it plunges, you're like, okay, as long as I can get half of my money back before it goes completely down into the negative, I'll do it. I'll do it now because time's a ticking. So I can understand their panic a little bit. But yeah, that's what he's trying to say. That's what I think. That's what he's trying to say here is
Right.
like
I mean
if we
that
stay
is
the course,
right. I
we'll be
mean
okay.
that's Capra. I mean I know you mentioned yesterday you only seen two Capra movies, but Capra's movies are all about that. They're all about the little people and how you can, still make a difference, even though you're, in everyone can make a difference in their small ways. That type of thing.
Yeah, I saw there was a friend of mine that was talking like if you don't bother, like if you just live your life, over the course of your life, you're going to reach about 5,000 people just that you talk to, right? That you
Right.
by just existing, you're going to affect the lives of about 5,000 people in some small way. And that's if you don't even try.
Correct.
That's if you just keep to yourself and try to go through. But imagine if you did try. Imagine if you gave it a shot to really affect people's lives. Every person is important and every person is powerful, whether they realize it or not. And so that, I think that's something that's also really important about this movie is, like George is a reluctant, he's the definition of,
A reluctant
life is
hero.
what happens. Yeah, well, reluctant hero, and also life is what happens when you're making other plans.
Yeah, we actually talked
Like,
about that phrase a few weeks ago.
yeah, like you have these dreams that in most cases will always be unrealized. But what you do while trying to achieve those dreams, that's what your life is. And it's something that is, it's this weird magic trick, where you fail to notice what's happening right in front of you because of the goals that you're trying to achieve one day down the line. And then when you fail to achieve those goals, but you've still had a rich life, it's only at that point, usually, that people have time to take stock and reflect on what they've actually done. So that's also the core and beauty of this movie.
Yeah,
for sure. He gets a chance to do it kind of early.
Right. And again, because that's the personality of George Bailey. You know, he is the type of guy who, no matter what you do, and no matter how much he fights it, he still is there to help others. You know, as much as he wants to be selfish, he isn't able to be selfish. You know, and we also see how he affects others around him, which we'll get to very shortly. Because, you know, even he has, you know, I don't remember if it's today or tomorrow, we're going to be able to find out that it's not just George who wants to help everyone here.
Yeah.
And then the conversation continues, and Charlie continues and says to him, I got $242 in here, and $242 isn't going to break anybody. How much do you think $242 in 1932 is worth today?
I'd say like at least $1,200, you know.
It's $5,435.
Woo!
Okay.
Well, that's, I mean, it's like there's this line in here that I remember I saw this meme that was going around about how it's still resonant. And it's scary that it's still resonant, is when he says, do you know how long it takes the working man to save $5,000? You know, like that's, and this that's movie's, right. What is this movie again? 1948 or something like
that? No, the movie came out in 1946, but right now.
Yeah, 46.
But I mean, right now what's taking place in the movie is 1932, even though we do get up to 1945.
Yeah, so what he's saying, you know, do you know how long it takes the working man to save up $5,000? That's still relevant today. You know, it's hard to save up $5,000. And if, especially, I mean, if you take in the, you know, temporal exchange rate, you know, whatever, $5,000, $5,932 is probably like, you know, $40,000 or something like that now. So that's like very, very hard to save up that kind
of money. Right. We'll get there. During the course of the week, we'll actually be able to find out exactly how much that is. So,
yeah.
Right. So, I mean, basically, at this point, I mean, again, that's what Charlie is saying is that he's got $5,500 in there, and he's asking George to give him that back, that $5,500. You know, $5,500 is a lot of money. You know, when you think of only $242, that's fine. If someone were to say today, give me $242 that I have invested, it's not going to break anybody, I would agree with that. But looking at the value of $242 back then, the value is equal to $5,000 today. That's a lot more money.
Yeah.
You know.
It is.
And so
it's something also, yeah.
Right. And this character who says it, it's not Charlie, it's Tom, sorry. It's played by an actor named Edward Keene, who was born in 1884 and passed away in 1959 at the age of 75. Born in
1884.
Yeah.
Good long life there. And at K-E-A-N, or sorry, K-E-A-N?
K-E-A-N-E.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So he passed away at the age of 75, which means that he's in his 60s here. And he has 318 IMDb credits. So
300?
Yeah. I mean, we've come across so many character actors just in the course of these last 57 minutes who have a lot of IMDb credits because they've small little bit pieces in you know, more than just Frank Capra movies, I guess. You know, so it makes sense. So then George says, okay, Tom, all right, here you are. You sign this and you'll get your money in 60 days. 60 days? Now that's what you agreed to when you bought your shares. So, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, if you go to the bank and you want to get a lot of money out back from them, I don't know if they're going to give it to you that particular day. Depends on how much you need and how much is there. You just see the movies when people come in, they close their account and they get a big suitcase filled with thousands of dollars. But not all banks carry so much money that they're able to release on a at a, any given time.
Did you ever see the TV show Ozark? There's a bit where Jason, gosh, what's his name from Teen Wolf and Family Ties, and Jason
Yeah,
Thompson?
sure.
No, Jason, I
Jason
forget
Bateman, I
his
know.
name,
Yes.
but Jason Bateman. There you go, Jason Bateman. So he is an accountant, and he's unknowingly working for an organization who he is trying to steal from the mob.
Okay.
And he's like, what? And not like but like a Mexican crime syndicate, not like a New York mob situation. But he doesn't realize this. And then everybody else in the company gets killed except for him, because he talks to the mob boss in a way that says, look, I can launder all your money, and I didn't know anything about the theft that was happening. And the mob boss says, okay, you have my attention, you've got a week. And he's like, oh, okay. And so he has to take all of his money out of the bank. And his idea is that he's going to go to the Ozarks because there's a lot of tourism there. And all these tourists come in over the summer, empty their wallets, and leave, which is a perfect place for money laundering schemes that he has ideas for. But he has to take out all of his investments first because he owes this guy. This guy says, okay, you can give me $5 million by the end of the week. And he's like, well, I've got, $4.5 million in investments. I could take that out and maybe figure out a way to get the other 500,000. So he has to go to the bank and say, I want all of my investments, all of my money out now.
Right.
And they're like, well, we can't do that, right? We can only do that, by Friday or something, because that's a lot of money. But like FBI people are there when he goes to collect his money. They're giving him handwritten notes like, are you being, blackmailed into doing this? Is there an emergency happening right now? Why you need all this money? And he has this great speech of like, look, you're going to give me all my money because there are regulations that say you need to have at least a third of everybody's investments on the premises or available to you at some point. And if you don't, then I'll tell everybody and we're going to get a run going on this bank because nobody will have faith in you. And also I can, so he, because he's an accountant, he knows all the laws and rules of banks and what is needed and what can be done when they're saying, well, we can't do that. He's like, yeah, actually you can, and you need to, right? So he's got this leverage because he actually knows something about financial institutions. It's a great scene, but it's exactly what's happening is he's like,
Right.
I need my money now, much like this character is here. He's like, sorry to hear you're going through trouble, but I need my money now. And you can do it. And do it. And it might be a dent in your entire institution, but legally you're obliged to. And it's interesting here to realize that, like, I love this whole the design, the grand design of Potter in this moment, because he's not under the guise of generosity. He's trying to bankrupt the buildings and loan because he
Right.
can't get a hold on it. He's like, I need to take everybody from the banking, from the buildings and loan, away from the buildings and loan by manufacturing a crisis, and then they'll go under, and then I'll have the people, right? And it's, he even says, right, he's not selling shares, he's buying you.
Correct. But again, it's Potter is taking advantage of the situation. He didn't cause the run on the bank.
How did the run in the bank happen? I thought
Well,
there
we
was
don't know.
something that
We don't
was.
know. It's it it
Oh, we don't know.
I believe it's connected to something that was happening, during the Depression. That
Okay.
you know.
In my head, I thought there was something
No,
that I
he
missed,
took
that it
over
was
the
somehow
bank. He
Potter's fault.
took over he took over the bank in order to save them. But And then someone bursts in and goes, Tom, did you get your money? And he goes, no. Well, I did. And he shows some cash. He goes, "Old man Potter will pay 50 cents on the dollar for every share you've got." 50 cents on the dollar? Yeah, cash. "Well, what do you say?" Tom turns to George. "Well, what do you say? Now, Tom, you have to stick to your original agreement. Now, give us 60 days on this." And then he turns and goes, "Okay, Randall, are you going to go to Potter's? Better get half than nothing." So, first of all, that's very strange that these people are willing to give up half of their money for it. Again, talk about the fact that if he's got $5,500 there, the equivalent to $5,500, would you be willing to give away $2,700 right away, just that easily, without trying to find some way
No.
to get it? That I mean, that's it's part of the problem here is that we're looking at this movie as, okay, it's only $242. If it's $242 and someone were to say to you, "Are you going to give up $120?" You might say, "All right, I'll give up $120." But when you're thinking that it's the equivalent of $5,500, that's something that's very different here.
Yeah, it is. But it helps outline the panic that's happening.
Yes, for
And
sure.
it's all relative, right? You hear about these people making these $22 million deals and stuff. Like, at some point the money becomes abstract. It's just that you start to talk in percentages. You had 100% and now you've got 50.
That's right.
And the temperature's falling, the rates are diving. Like, whatever's happening is going in a direction that you don't want it to go in.
Correct.
It's always interesting to me, this whole idea that, like, if one person panics, that's okay. But if everybody panics, that's the downfall of society. Like, if everybody wants their money now, then the buildings and loan is gone for good. So
That's right. So he mentions the term.
if he can keep everybody calm, which he's doing a great job of
That's
doing,
right.
but
And I mean, they mentioned the fact of cash. People want cash. So
cash, yeah.
what do you think?
Cash is king.
There you go. What do you think the word cash comes from?
I'd be really interested to know. I don't know.
Okay, so.
Like, to me, it reminds me of, like, CACHE, cash, like something you'd something of value you keep some buried under a log somewhere.
Okay,
But I don't
you're
have to
right.
know what
It
that is.
actually is connected to that because the original term for cash was a money box, CASH. But that's the same thing as a CACHE. You have a cache of
All right,
weapons, a
well, there
cache
you
of money or whatever it is. It's a box that you're keeping stuff in, or a stash or whatever it is. And then later on it started becoming known as money. And then
Right.
once you reach the 18th century, it was only known as as money. So the idea of a money box, that it changed the spelling is different, from that whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, as we know, most of the time, in olden days, people used to use coins or silver and stuff like that in order to think. But when we think of cash, so cash is paper money, right? When do you think they started using paper money and where?
I think they always use paper money. It's just that the I would well, my guess would be the first place this showed up would be Great Britain. That would be my guess, or else somewhere in Egypt or in the Middle East somewhere. They seem to be pretty ahead of the curve with a lot of that
Okay,
stuff.
so paper money was
But
first.
paper, oh, but you need a forest. You need the resources to make paper money, and I'm not sure how much that was. So I would say the UK, that would be my guess.
Okay, so paper money was first used in China.
China, of course. Oh, I should have guessed. Yes, of course. They were way ahead of the
That's
curve
right.
on a lot of the stuff,
That's
right?
right. During the Tang Dynasty. And only when Marco Polo showed up in China in the 13th century, did they find out that people were using paper money as opposed to coins, silver, gold, whatever it is. And so, he brought that idea back to the West.
Yeah, well, it's that it's a step removed. It's an abstraction, right? It's
Of
a
course.
it, that's where money starts to become theoretical. Like a gold piece is a gold piece, but a piece of paper that's worth a gold piece,
That's right.
that's a different thing.
That's right. Well, it's the
But
same.
the possibilities are endless.
Well, it's the
Because
same.
if you have five if you get 500 gold pieces or 1,000 gold pieces, it starts to become pretty dang unwieldy to carry around and pretty obvious to carry around. But if you have 10 pieces of paper that are worth 500 gold pieces each, and you've got that tucked in a pocket, and you're the richest man in town, and nobody knows.
That's right. Especially since all the pieces of paper look exactly this, are the same, just a different number on them.
Yeah. Well, that's the weird thing about American money to me. I like Canadian money because it's hard to look gangster when you're holding up a bunch of money that looks like a rainbow
I
because
have the
there's
same thing
like
here in
19
Israel.
different colors.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we always joke that the money here looks like Monopoly money, because it's all different
Sure,
colors and stuff
right.
like that. So I know in Canada it's the
But
same.
it's so much, yeah, it's so much easier to tell, what you've got when all the bills are a different color. So it's very, I because there's scams based on that in the States where you hold up a $10 bill to pay for a drink, and then when the bartender pours you the drink in a busy bar, he takes the money that you give him, but you've shown him the
And you're
10,
only
but you
giving him
give
a
him a
one.
one.
That's right.
Yeah, but he's none the wiser because he's not paying attention. But that's something that would never be possible in Canada, or like
Or
I
in
think
Israel.
almost any
That's
other country in the world, right? And
right.
so many places have much more colorful money than the
Yes.
States. But then the dollar bill is such a symbol, right? Such a symbol in the States, so.
That's true also. It's a good point. But I mean, basically the way that it all so cash just became, as you said, an easier way to pay for things without having to drag around all these other coins and stuff like that. And nowadays we have it with electronic banking. It's the same type of thing. Now it's just, it's zeros and ones. That
Yeah.
which in some ways is even scarier. Because
Another level of
that's
abstraction,
right.
right? Another level of
That's
abstraction.
right, because I mean, it makes it easier also when you're paying with a credit card and all that stuff. It's all, it things just get smaller and smaller. Now you just have this little plastic card that is worth the same amount. You instead of having to carry around this paper, these pieces of paper, that type of thing. I think they even have like a game of Monopoly where they have credit cards, like versions of it, where you don't have cash
Oh
anymore.
yeah,
I think so.
that would make sense. And I love the whole thing about the how Monopoly was created and what it was created for. It was, I don't know if you know this, but Monopoly was created to show the dangers of capitalism, or the dangers of having a monopoly. Like there was two games that the creator created, and one was like more of a I can't really remember now, but one was not Monopoly and one was Monopoly. And one was like, here's how an economic system could actually work to the benefit of all. And then here's Monopoly, a dedicated example of how unbridled capitalism results in one person having everything and everybody else being ruined. So that's what we don't want. So, but this other game here, this is what we do want. And
Interesting.
Mattel or whatever bought it and was like, well, forget that other game. Let's just put out Monopoly. And so
Monopoly's
it became this
Parker Brothers.
Parker, yeah. So
Oh, wow, that's
that
interesting.
needs a few more that needs a few more details. I didn't have the full details on that one, but it's that's how it was created as a cautionary tale of the way not to be. And it became a best-selling game that lots of people like that they miss the point of it. It's like
I think that's the way most things
you're
work.
not getting rich, you're ruining society.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much
Right.
so. There's a lot of thousands of examples of the same sort of
That's
thing.
right. I mean, we talked about Monopoly during The Great Escape because the Allies used Monopoly games to transfer information to prisoners, and like they give them maps and stuff like that. I remember we talked about that. All those seasons ago. And so then the conversation continues, and then a woman turns to, "Are you going to go to Potter's?" And then he goes, better to get half than nothing. Remember we talked about that? And then everyone starts making noise. And then he goes, Tom, Randall. Now, Randall, wait. Now, listen to me. I beg you not to do this. If Potter gets a hold of this building and loan, there'll never be another decent house built in this town. He's already got charge of the bank. He's got the bus line. He's got the department stores. And now he's after us. Why? Well, it's very simple. Because we're cutting in on his... And then he gets cut off. Which is funny that he gets cut off with cutting in on his, but yeah. So it.
That's funny.
So I mean, it basically goes to show that this really is Pottersville. You know, he's now got the bank.
Yeah.
You know, they say he's got the bus line, so I guess he owns the bus line and all the department stores. So you know, hey, if Potter is in charge of everything, so like how it's just funny that the fact that he doesn't have the building and loan, that's what's going to stop him.
It's not. Yeah. Well,
it's like, why is that? You know, if someone owns so many different things in a town, so the fact that they don't have one thing, big deal. You know, you still own everything else.
Yeah, but it's pivotal.
Obviously,
it's people's homes,
right? And it's also pivotal because you need this for the movie, but it's part of the plot.
Yeah.
But
well, that's what I like about this movie is he doesn't own a local hobby store, you know. He doesn't own a still, you know. It's a very integral part of the financial and social fabric of the town.
Yes.
The economic prosperity, the economic certainty, the economic security of people's houses, which is very primal, and it's a linchpin. It turns out to be, you know, for the purposes of this movie, it turns out to be a linchpin of what's holding the whole town together. That somehow is the last domino. But it does seem that if he does own, you know, 95% of the town, then he's kind of already won.
That's right.
So, and that, but that's also, I mean, that's if we talk a little bit about the ending of the picture. I often wonder. Two things I wonder about the ending of the picture is, what if the town hadn't come together to give him some money at the end? You know, would he still have walked away like, well, I lost everything, but I do see the value in the life that I have? You know, would he still be okay with it? Like, the happy ending of the movie is strange, but also the happy ending of the movie is like, he hasn't won. He's survived to be attacked 2 weeks later again by Potter. Like, you know, right. Like, this isn't, you know, the ending of the film isn't the ending of the film, because Potter's not going to stop until he dies, which, you know, might not be too far in the future. You know, if it's, it seems to be, he's quite elderly and he's in a wheelchair. And so like maybe he'll be like one of those people that hangs on for another 30 years, but
he's the devil.
Yeah, that's the whole, he's the devil. He's not going to go away anytime soon. So it's tough. It's tough to be in the situation that they're in. Like, this building alone is on the ropes. And if he can, like, what is it somebody says? Like, if I could just make it through this month, then I can go into another month of just making it through that month before I have to make it through another month. You know, like, it's that kind of existence that he's in right now. It's just this building alone is
right.
Getting by on fumes. But he's managed to save it for one more day.
That's right.
And I think that's something that gets lost in the discussion about this movie, is that he's fighting a losing battle, and this triumph is a small one in an almost guaranteed eventual defeat. But it is worthy of celebration because of the spiritual and moral turnaround that he feels within himself.
Right. Sure. Now, I mean, one of the things that I find very interesting about this whole conversation in this minute is that, you know, George is clearly showing everybody that, you know, Potter's the devil and I'm the good person here.
Yeah.
You know, and that I'm here
and
to help
he's
you.
But he's also
putting, I'm here to help, like, you.
He's also putting, yeah, and he's also putting all the cards on the table.
That's right.
He's being very transparent. He's like, you know, we are in jeopardy. Yeah. You know, like, but we're all driving the car together. And if you stay, then there's a chance we'll survive. I'm not giving you any guarantees. And Potter is a steamroller. You know, he's like, the only thing that's important here is if you go with Potter, your reality will be worse.
Right.
You know, across the board. Like he's like, I have to try to get this abstract concept across to people that are panicking about their very practical concerns of their money, their tangible, practical concerns of their money. I have to show them that, like, it's not just the principle of the thing. I'm not just saying I'm good and he's bad. I'm saying, like, you have to cast an eye towards the future. If he does win, your quality of life will lessen, you know, and you have to understand that. But it's really hard to make a crowd of panicking people understand that. And I think that's why, you know, another reason why I'm so happy I got these minutes is just what a great speech this is and how relevant it still is to everything that's happening to us today.
It's true. All right. That's all I have for this minute. You have anything else for this minute?
No.
All right. So our segment on Tuesday is Off the Beaten Track, Uplifting Experience Story. It's a time when my guest will give an anecdote, adventure, misadventure, some sort of story of something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is, has left an impact on them as an uplifting experience. So what, you got a story for us, Duncan?
I do indeed. This was a long time ago. This was 1994 or something.
I hope it's not about you wearing women's underwear again.
No, that's not that one. Oh my gosh, I'd forgotten. I told you that story. This was,
you didn't just tell me, you told everybody.
I told the world. This is
well, just no, whoever listens to my show. But yeah.
I had I hadn't done my taxes in about 4 or 5 years, and I was probably about 24 at the time. And, you know, I've been working in restaurants and, you know, just, you know, I kept my T4s. I just never got around to it. And it was, you know, beneath my notice, and I figured nobody cared, but I was starting to become an adult, and I was like, you know, I should get this together. But I was going through like a really bad breakup, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I think I was looking for work or something like that. And I was like, well, I think I should at least take care of these taxes. And I didn't want to, because I'm not really good with all these forms, and it seemed like a dizzying amount of unknowable information, and I felt like, you know, I was going to get audited or something like that on top of everything else. So I was like, I should take care of this. So I went down to this local, what they call here an H&R Block, is an organization that does taxes around tax time for people. They charge you a chunk of money and then they do all your taxes for you. So I walked in, and there's like seasonal accountants that it's like a Spirit Halloween store, right? Except it's H&R Block for tax season, where they take up empty storefronts. They get accountants that want to make a bit of extra money, and then they give them a job for 2 months doing people's taxes. And so, you know, I went in there and I got seated with this older guy. You know, I was 23, so older guy probably means he was about our age. You know, he was probably only like 48 or 52. He's very thin and a little wizened. So, you know, he'd seen some stress, I think, and seen some rough road.
In other words, he could have been an extra in a Frank Capra movie.
He very much could have, sure, yeah. And so I said, well, I need to do my taxes for the last 5 years. And he was like, okay. And it was one of those things where sometimes where you don't realize how bad you're feeling, where you're going through a really rough patch, but you've still got your head above water and you've got your eye on the prize, but you don't realize that you're in a darker place than you thought, and you're going through, you're experiencing a lot more turmoil than you realize, because you're holding it all at bay. You're keeping things together, and you have to stay on top of, you know, whatever meager resources you have and whatever equilibrium you can keep. So I walk in there, and obviously in a state, you know, I'm a young man, and, you know, I have nothing, and I've got to do 5 years of taxes. And, you know, so I was expecting a fairly impersonal, robotic experience by an uncaring accountant, because that's what you think of. To me, I think of, you know, when, at least at that point in my life, I thought of accountants as heartless robots who crunch numbers, you know.
Okay. That's fair.
And that also speaks to this movie, right? You know, it's like George is ostensibly a banker, right? So he's supposed to be the guy who's like, haha, give me all your money, I don't care, foreclose. He's supposed to be Potter, but he's not. you know, and that it, this is a movie that shows that there are people in charge of financial institutions who aren't bloodthirsty criminals, right? There are also people that are trying to help and want to, you know, help the community. And so this person, I forget his name, he did my taxes for me. It took about 2 hours to get through. Like, my taxes were simple. It was just T4s, and, you know, I didn't have a whole bunch of expenses or shell companies or anything like that. So it was a very simple process for him because I had my T4s. But it took a couple hours to go through each year and me trying in vain to remember specifics about things that happened 4 years ago, which, you know, when you're 24 and you're trying to remember what you did at 20, that's like remembering what happened 50 years ago.
That's right.
But we got it all done, and he was just the nicest, kindest, you know, avuncular, fathery, you know, kind of guy that I really needed in my life at that time. And he really just slowly, nicely took me through it. And then it was all done, and I think I ended up getting a check for like $4,000 at the end of it because it was – I don't make a lot of money, so I didn't at the time, and that was like – all the taxes that were owed to me for the course of 5 years. So, you know, I walked in there thinking I'm going to get dinged for another $800 or something like that. But I ended up walking out with like $3,000 or $4,000 or something like that, which, you know, to a 24-year-old who's going through a rough time is like winning the lottery. So I was very happy about that and relieved about that. And it was an ordeal to go through. And then just before I left, he said to me, "Hey, before you leave, can you do me a favor?" And I thought he was going to say, you know, make sure you fill out a Z trouble, you know, a ZWH alpha form or something like that, or you're going to be in trouble, you know. And he's like, before you leave, can you do me a favor? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he was like, have a nice day.
Oh, well.
You know, and that's like a trite thing, but he was this older guy. I don't know. It just got me like an arrow right in the heart. I was like, you got it, man. Well, even talking about it now, I'm kind of tearing up a little bit. It was very nice of him to do.
Oh, wow. Too bad you don't remember his name. You can go look for him. And
yeah,
see,
he was just...
See what, see, you know, just send him a little note saying, thank you very much for all those years ago being a bright point.
And it's a good... Yeah, and it's one of those things where like you can talk about something that... you know, your wife did for you, or your child did for you, or your sibling did for you, or something like that. But when a random stranger that you never met before and you will never meet again creates that kind of goodness in your life, that's really special.
Yeah.
And it's a very integral part of being the human experience. So you try to be that for other people, and once in a while, you can be, right?
Right. Sure. All right, great. Thank you very much for that story. I appreciate that. All right, so Duncan, you want to tell people where they can find Duncan Shields?
Yeah, they can go to Buy Duncan Shields. I had all the social medias and go to Toronto Logically Speaking, or look for Duncan Shields Poetry on YouTube, and you'll find some shenanigans of me doing spoken word.
All right, and while you're doing that, you can go rate and view and subscribe. Great review and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So, until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow. Life with its tears.